Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
It's time for Supply Chain Now Radio, sponsored by Apex Atlanta and Talent Stream, broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia. Supply Chain Now Radio spotlights the best in all things supply chain, the people, the companies, the technologies, the best practices, and, of course, the critical issues of the day. Now, here's your host, Scott Luton.
Thanks, Stone. Appreciate it. We are back with a live show today. A beautiful morning here in the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia. And today, Stone, we've got two co-hosts that we're excited to have part of the conversation. We've been collaborating with both Ben and Will for quite some time. But we want to welcome first our first co-host, Ben Harris, Director, Supply Chain Ecosystem Expansion with the Metro Atlanta Chamber. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Scott.
Glad to have you here. And Will Haraway, good friend and founder and CEO of Backbeat Marketing. Good morning, Will.
Good morning, Scott.
Glad y'all are both here. And in addition to two rock and roll co-hosts, we've got two rock and roll supply chain leaders that we're going to be diving more into their stories and their organizations. Good morning, Amari Ruff, founder and CEO of Sudu.
Good morning, Scott. How's it going?
Glad you're here. And Sean Henry, founder and CEO of Stored. Good morning.
Thank you for having us here, Scott.
Glad you're here. So, as always, Ben and Will, we're going to be kicking off today's show with some of the top things to know in supply chain now. And it's very difficult to keep this to a 15-minute segment because we could talk for hours, right?
We're going to do it.
Sure could.
We're going to keep it tight.
Keep it tight. I like that. All right. So, so Ben, we're going to kick off with you. So, we've got two or three things to tackle that you woke up with, front of mind, front of center. The first one is this fast fashion giant Zara,
yes.
In their latest logistics strategy, where they're going to be adding a whole slew of distribution centers.
Yeah, I guess you couldn't necessarily call them distribution centers, but they're going to call them that. They're actually using or leveraging, I should say, their 2,000 stores worldwide as their distribution centers. So complete shift in a model for them. You know, a long time, usually you have to have an actual distribution center network to do that. And they're, you know, making honestly a pretty big bet, you know, going to this model. So it's kind of a wait and see approach. Just we'll see if it pays off. But their parent company, Inditex, has long been a fast fashion retail giant. Mm. They're actually one of the top five supply chain companies, according to Gartner. So on the inbound side, been fantastic for years, kind of from a best practices standpoint. But on the outbound side, you know, it'll be interesting. So we'll see where it goes, and we'll definitely monitor what happens there.
So what's interesting, they're following the footsteps of retailers like Walmart and Target and Macy's and JCPenney. They really utilize their stores as quote-unquote distribution centers. And I guess the goal there is to allow the retailers to fulfill online orders more profitably by reducing the shipping costs, right?
Correct. Okay. Exactly. So, yeah, there's a lot that goes into it as far as how the stores will probably look to. I mean, that could completely transform, and also what their associates do within the store
right.
also. So, Will, I think we've talked about that for years back in our Manhattan days.
But, yeah. Well, that's the issue. You're asking these stores now to be warehouses. You're asking them to be distribution centers. But the problem is when you've done that, especially with these like really small mall size, the mid-size stores, is where do you put the stuff?
Mm. Yep.
And how do the associates deal with it?
Yep.
You know, they were hired to be retail folks.
That's
and all
right.
of a sudden you're asking them to be distribution center warehouse workers. So that's a whole nother issue, has been a hard thing for retailers to address.
Yep, absolutely.
Yep. So we'll see how it plays out, this grand experiment here. So secondly, Ben, let's talk about Uber Technologies. They've made a big announcement this past week.
Yeah, apparently they are shutting down their troubled self-driving truck unit here. So they made a big bet a couple years ago acquiring Otto. And made a big PR deal about them actually purchasing Otto and doing some deliveries for Budweiser, I believe, amongst other companies. But apparently they've had some issues there recently, a couple lawsuits apparently that have kind of contributed to this. this division was actually based in Pittsburgh, outside of their normal headquarters, of course, which is in San Francisco. And those, I think it could have been the lawsuits which led to this, but apparently they see too much, you know, in the market there, and they want to get back with their new CEO to what they do best, which is, you know, their normal model as far as moving people instead of freight. Now, they still do have Uber Freight, though. Mm. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And they say that they want to make investments around Uber Freight, but, you know, actions speak louder than words, so right. as we all know. So
all about deeds.
That's exactly. So we'll definitely something to watch there as well.
All right. And moving right along, Ben, the Georgia Ports Authority and Georgia Tech signed a huge new agreement here this past week, right?
They sure did. I was actually at the groundbreaking there in Savannah at the Georgia Ports Authority Garden City Terminal, largest single terminal in mm-hmm. North America, actually. And they decided that they've been working together, you know, in a ad hoc way. For years, basically. They had never formalized, really, a partnership between the two places. Georgia Tech has their Supply Chain and Logistics Institute, led by Benoit and Tim Brown over there. They do a fantastic job. Mari, I'm sure you could weigh on this, on all the stuff that Georgia Tech's been doing for you for years.
Absolutely. Those guys are geniuses over there. You know, go over there with a problem, they're going to help you out with a solution. They've been super supportive to Sudo as a company, and definitely excited to be partnered and working with those guys.
The best.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they're going to do, basically, with between the two units. Is Tech's work with, you know, definitely some different partners for years as far as doing port optimization and things like that, but that's really at the core of what Georgia Tech does with their Supply Chain Logistics Institute. They put these fantastic students on a project, and they can really sink their teeth into how to really optimize flows within the port and also outside the port, which is even really more important. We get into trucking and some other things once you leave the port, rail, the access there, and I think they're going to do some really fun and really cool things together.
Have you seen the lab downstairs?
I've been there once, Amari.
Oh, man.
What's the latest?
It's just cool, man. It looks like you're in another world down there. You got to get down there and check it out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, speaking of Georgia Tech, so Apex Atlanta for years now has had a really strong alliance and strategic partnership with Tim Brown and the whole team down there. And I've always known that their Stewart School of Industrial and Systems Engineering, the ISYE, which is a big part of the GTSCL, the Supply Chain Logistics Institute, has been tops in the country. But as I was doing some research for today's show, because I know that they provide a lot of support for all of us here in the room, tops in the country for 28 years in a row.
That's correct.
That's like Ric Flair territory, right?
They are the ISYE's number one for undergraduate and graduate.
Wow.
In the nation. So.
Okay. Part of what makes Atlanta the hashtag Supply Chain City. Capital
Supply Chain City.
That's right. Okay. So shifting gears. So thanks, Ben, for that. Great way to kick off the conversation today. Mr. Will Haraway, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
So let's talk about a political football, or maybe an economic football, the effect of the Trump tariffs on the supply chain industry. What are your thoughts there?
Well, we've got some piping hot, fresh tariff news for you today, Scott. I'll tell you. So yesterday, our president, in his wisdom, recommended increasing tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese imports up to 25%. As you know, this has been escalating back and forth since March, I think, when he first announced it. And then China comes back and announces, you know, how they're going to react. But so that's up from the 10% that they announced on mm-hmm. July 3rd. And this is on a list of goods that includes food products, tobacco, pesticides, and luggage. So the supply chains, the manufacturers, the shippers, they were already preparing for 10%. And now they've got a plan for more than double that, mm-hmm. right? So, but the thing is right now it's really just all posturing. But whether or not these go into effect, the uncertainty is what's creating this turmoil. Yep. As these businesses plan for sourcing, they plan for production, they're trying to, you know, to make sure that these goods don't ultimately cost them profits. I mean, let's get down to the brass tacks of it. But one of the things that we've seen, and you already talked about the Savannah ports, is the effect that it's had on ports all around the country. Down in Savannah in particular, they're seeing record import volumes. Because importers have ordered aggressively to get ahead of these tariffs, should they go into effect.
Yeah, peak season has come early this year.
That's right. So, you know, I've been talking a lot about this to, you know, folks around town, Supply Chain City, of course. There's always somebody to talk to. But John Slanger up, he's a friend of the show. Been a
big friend.
Yep, friend of the show. CEO of American Global Logistics in Buckhead. You know, talk to him about it. How are they preparing? They're saying their customers have been stocking up on inventory before the tariffs are enacted, so and speeding up their sources before they lose money when the tariffs come into play. So, but what I've found just through research and going through what a lot of the analysts are saying, the tariffs have actually kind of turned out to be like any disruption that you see in the supply chain, you know, be it a hurricane or the Hanjin bankruptcy a couple years ago, you know, and it actually shows how agile supply chains have become, because what used to be a complete roadblock, now you just are able to anticipate, plan better, make some adjustments, and move quickly before the global impact.
Yep. So supply chain always makes it happen, right? They take every curveball and they figure out a way to put it in play. But going back to your first point, we can all appreciate, whether you're in supply chain or you're in some other sector, we all love certainty, right? That makes planning and growing and you know, doing what we have to do to deliver a product or service much easier.
Yes, sir.
All right, so shifting gears to something maybe a little more exciting, the growth of additive manufacturing. So give me your update on that.
Well, more hot news this week. You know, so this week, you guys I'm sure heard about this, but a group in Texas, of course it's Texas, was blocked by a federal judge from uploading the plans to 3D print a series of guns on the internet. You guys saw this big news in the middle of the week. So basically, if you had the right printer and you got the right materials, you could print out a working gun, This guy had tested it. It worked. So putting aside all of the First Amendment and, you know, that makes people
push that way to
just freak out, right? But, you know, who's really freaking out about that? Manufacturers. Because all of a sudden, you know, they're cutting out the middleman with this, you know, especially gun manufacturers. They're cutting out the middleman. They're giving plans to the consumer to make what they want. So, and it's really, it's a mainstream indicator that's showing that in 2018, 3D printing has really matured. Industries like aerospace and medical devices, I mean, 3D printing is making the virtual warehouse reality. You know, instead of creating these 10,000 widgets or 10,000 products that live in a warehouse and just sit there, you know, with 3D printing, the idea is that you could create the exact amount of inventory you need.
Yep. Truly just in time. I mean, truly
just in time. Yeah. I mean, order what you need and put it in place.
Yep.
I mean, for the supply chain industry, you know, companies that several of us in this room are working for or work for, this is that, you know, that's actually a little scary. You know, what happens to warehouses? What happens to warehouse management software, you know, if you no longer need inventory?
Yep.
You know, but this technology's here. I mean, our friends just down the street, at UPS, you know, they've got two working printing facilities, one in Louisville, Kentucky, and one in Singapore. And the idea is that you can print and ship exactly what you need on that same day.
Well, you know, not only is it here in a very real and practical way, but our students here in Georgia at the academy system, they're learning 3D printing in high school. They're being exposed to it in middle schools. The technical academies they put out in the counties now, the College and Career Academy, right? Okay. I think we've got 40 or 50 counties with these in place now. And having toured the one in Newton County where big things are happening, they're actually having high schoolers print off parts via 3D printer. So not only is corporate America jumping on it and figuring out how to, you know, where the practical approach to using 3D and additive manufacturing is, our students, you know, it's not going to be long before my 9-year-old's teaching me how to print something at home, right? So just in time, love it. Ben and Will, thanks for sharing some of the top things to know in supply chain now.
Sure.
There's no shortage of things we can talk about.
We kept it tight. That was tight.
Very tight.
Tight segment.
Until the end there, I kind of went wobbly. But hey, shifting gears here, we have got two supply chain leaders with really neat stories that are doing big things in the industry that we're going to be talking with today. And our first guest on Supply Chain Now Radio, we welcome Amari Ruff, founder and CEO of Sudu. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
So, Amari, glad to have you. You know, a good starting point, I think, is tell us, what is Sudu?
What is Sudu? Sudu is speed and tempo in Chinese, actually.
Okay.
And the correct pronunciation is Sudu.
Ah.
So I need you guys to learn that.
Like it.
But no, we are a transportation provider. We leverage technology to connect small and medium-sized trucking companies to corporations that ship goods. So we work to, you know, disrupt the traditional freight brokerage company by layering on technology to drive speed and efficiency.
And tell us about, you know, we had the warm-up conversation. We really enjoyed picking your brain more personally and on the Sudo model. Close? Yeah.
No. Sue, more Sue to it.
We're going to work on that after this, Scott. We've got to get that right.
Yeah, my Southern English is coming right on out. But so talk about some of the community segments that you serve, really focus on.
Yeah, I know when we first started the company, you know, we wanted to focus on small and medium-sized trucking companies initially because they make up majority of the market. But then there was another underserved market, which were minority women and veteran-owned trucking companies. And, you know, our goal was to harness them and, you know, present quality freight opportunities to them so they can grow and be able to predict and project, you know, revenue so they can grow their businesses. So that was our main initiative when we first hit the market, and our customers were super excited about it, and they supported us, and, you know, it really, you know, helped us get the traction that we've got today by just focusing on that segment.
And big traction today. Founded in 2014, you talked about you really got a shot in the arm in 2016, but now you're working with big industry titans like Walmart, Georgia Pacific, Mohawk, UPS, AB InBev. I mean, like a who's who list,
yeah,
right?
Just to name a few.
That's terrific. Right. That's terrific. Well, so what makes you different?
You know, with us, you think about, like we spoke about earlier, we're like the Uber of truckins. We don't consider ourselves an Uber of truckin'. We've taken a more traditional approach into the industry where we take more of a human in a loop approach to technology because that's just what the industry requires. So we take pride in not asking our carriers within our network to have to change their behaviors, you know, continue to operate the same way you've been, you know, the entire time. And the same for our customers, the same way you've been working with a J.B. Hunt or a Snyder. We can connect with you the same way. That could be via EDI or API. And we make things comfortable for our customers on both sides, truckers and shippers. And then all of our efficiencies operate on the back end. So you're looking and you're like, wow, these guys are moving all this freight. They got to have hundreds of people in the office and it's 11, you know. But that's where our technology is doing that heavy lifting.
So what came up through some of the pre-interview research we were doing, this notion of empty miles, and y'all are proud eliminators of empty miles.
We don't like empty miles. So, make us angry.
I believe that sitting here next to you. Well, so how do y'all eliminate that? How do y'all strike through that and make people feel better that they're what they're paying for, they're really getting?
Yeah. So, you know, eliminating the empty miles brings value to both sides, to the shipper and as well as the carriers. So we take all the preferences when we bring a carrier onto our system from truck type, trailer type. But what's most important is the lanes they like to run, commodities they like to move, parts of the region they like to be in. So once we have those preferences, since we work with all these large enterprise customers, we're getting a ton of freight. So now we're not just sending guys from A to B. Now we're sending them A to B, B to C, C to D, then D back to A, which we're packaging these loads, which is eliminating the empty miles, but also driving down a price for our customers as well, because now we're buying in packages and giving them to the truckers in packages.
So basically they're dropping their cargo and you're hooking them up with another load so that they don't go back home empty.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's it.
So, you know, a big part of, you know, how you deliver value working with the carriers, how do you work differently with the carriers? Talk about how you treat those carriers. That's a really important part of the equation.
Yeah, that's one of our core things we look at. You know, in our industry, traditionally, truckers have been at the bottom of the totem pole. You know, the guys have been taken advantage of, but they're the ones doing all the work. And your traditional freight brokerages, nothing against them. You know, they bring great value, but at the end of the day, their sole goal is to maximize margins off of every transaction. That's just it. You know, and for us, we don't look at it that same way. We're looking at, you know, how do we, you know, harness these carriers and actually help them grow their businesses. So part of our onboarding process is understanding their goals, where they want to be, what they want to do, if they want to go from 2 trucks to 10 trucks. Let's put a plan in place and understand that and help them grow their businesses. So we really treat our carriers just as well as we treat a Walmart or AB InBev, just that important, because without those guys, we can't be successful. So we've got to make sure that our service levels are high and that they're happy at the end of the day, because then we can continue to grow, because this industry is huge, but it's small. Everybody knows everybody. So you start, you know, messing up on some things or treating guys, you know, not really that well, it's going to get out there that, you know, we're not really a good company.
And that's a common challenge out there. You're talking about the traditional and the old-fashioned approach to how we treat drivers. And we're sitting here in 2018 struggling not only to maintain the drivers that are in the industry, but struggling to get new drivers in industry. And so how the treatment and the perception, I mean, how do you think that plays into the struggles we have?
I think it plays a lot into it. You think, you know, that the average age of a trucker is in the mid 50s. And I think, you know, these guys have been in the industry 15, 20 years and they're, you know, I hate to use this term, but they're kind of like, you know, they're beaten up. You know, these guys are all paranoid. You know, they don't believe anything. If it sounds too good to be true, it's not true. And, you know, the younger generations are hearing those things and it's like, okay, yeah, I can make 80, maybe 100,000, but it's going to be a pretty crappy life, you know, at least that's how it's being perceived. But, you know, by adding in technology and doing different innovative things and building a better trucking culture, I think we can start to change that narrative, you know, and really putting, you know, these truckers first, I think is important. But, you know, we've got a ways to go, but, you know, us and other startups and, you know, even some of the larger trucking companies are trying to change that narrative and do different things.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I was going to talk about this on the front end, but I figured it would come up as when with Sudu. Did I get that?
Oh, that was good.
I like that.
There you go.
That.
Yeah, I've been working on it in my head over here. But so you're talking about culture. You're talking about truckers. And, yes, they are sensitive and a little bit paranoid, like you said. So right off of that, how are they reacting to the ELD, you know, to the ELD mandate? Right?
They hated it.
Right.
They didn't like it at all. You know, they don't want to be tracked. You know, they
who does? Like, I don't want to be tracked.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But there's I could see the other side of that where, you know, you're talking about empty miles, you're talking about capacity, you're talking about hours of service, you know, that these guys, it's being tracked. Like, how are they, you know, how long are they on the road? For safety reasons, sure. But also, can you not be able to kind of turn that around and be able to say, like, all right, well, this driver's driven this amount of time and he's just dumped this load. And, you know, it almost provides another level of data that can then help them, you know, maximize their time and maximize their profits.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, and a lot of the truckers realize that, like, okay, the ELDs are going to help us in a certain perspective, but where it really hurts them is when it's unloading and loading times, because the clock is still ticking. So if you're at a bad DC that's, you know, swamped, you could be there 6 hours and that's going against your time.
That's right.
You know, and that's, and then, you know, you do that over a course of 30 days and they're used to making X amount of dollars, that amount of money is going to be decreased.
Yep.
But they're still spending the same amount for that truck. They're still driving the same amount of miles, and that's where they're getting hurt, and that's why they're not happy about it.
So on this note, let's give a background metric here. So does everyone here get the logistics market snapshot that the Georgia Center of Innovation puts out?
Sure. Absolutely. Do.
Good stuff.
What, great stuff. Seven this month, I think 5 pages. So one of the data points I gleaned from that, to give you some backdrop as it relates to demand, the Transportation Services Index, TSI, y'all stay with me here. It's kind of a few acronyms. TSI was created by the U.S. Department of Transportation, DOT, of course, and the Bureau of Transportation Statistics, which who knew there was one of those, all right, BTS. So it measures the movement of freight and passengers, this BTS metric point. So for May 2018, the index was 135.6, which sounds high with no context, but that's an all-time record since 2000 in terms of, so when we think about demand out there for moving anything, all-time high at least since 2000, and I think that's as long as they've been tracking the statistics. So, you know, the being able to leverage technology to tackle this opportunity and to help companies get things where it needs to go at the right price, at the right time, I mean, a huge opportunity. And it sounds like Sudu, close, hopefully.
No. I got to mess with you a little bit. No, that was pretty good. That was pretty good.
So it sounds like Sudu is close, is really cracking a nut on how we can really take a smarter approach here.
Yeah. And we've done some cool stuff. Like, something new we've been doing is, since we work with a lot of large enterprise customers, they have their private fleets. So we've been looking at private fleets and leveraging and helping them maximize their asset utilization. So now we'll set certain business rules and we may take that, you know, it could be an ABM Bev or that Mohawk Industries truck. And when they're going from their DC to DC, but then instead of coming back empty, we could maybe drop, you know, a UPS load on there, or, you know, know, it could be like a Gardner load or anything like that, just to help them maximize. And now they're turning that private fleet into like a profit center. So those are the different things we're looking at, because we're not going to get a wave of like 200,000 people that's just going to, you know, enter the industry immediately and be qualified to drive. So we've got to take different approaches where we can, you know, add different ways we can source capacity extremely quickly and then start to leverage our customers' private fleets to help them make money, which gives us more capacity. Win-win for everybody.
So how rewarding is it to help? You know, you're talking about, you know, helping folks grow from 2 trucks to 10 trucks or just grow in general. How rewarding is that, you know, to be founder and the fearless leader of an organization that help other entrepreneurs, you know, grow their companies?
You know, it's funny because it feels great. I know, like, as a kid, I remember one of my fears were growing up because I wouldn't get presents anymore. You know, I would have to buy all the presents.
Right.
But it's truly so much, it feels so much more better to give than to receive, to understand that you're really changing the lives of people and you're helping them make more money. Then they say that the way to be wealthy is to help other people be wealthy. Mm. So that's what we're doing. And it feels good every day that we could change, you know, slowly the lives of truckers. And we're making our small impact on the industry as a really small company.
Well, it sounds like by doing the right thing, you are moving at light speed. So some of the I was reading earlier that you've been recently recognized as the best early stage logistics and supply chain company by the Atlanta Business Chronicle in June.
It feels one, pretty good.
One accolade. And then you've got some really great news this week or recently about a big investment, right?
Yeah. We've got Comcast Ventures. That's a part of the Sudu team now. They invested in the Sudu. So we're super excited to be, you know, partnered with such a great brand and great company. And they're really believe in our vision and where we're going with it. So we're pumped about that. And we're putting the pedal to the metal. We're going to continue to grow and scale this business and make waves and make sure we try to stay on the boogie board while we're making these waves.
Well, you know, one of the things that in the warm-up conversation that really stood out that makes Sudu different is the uniqueness of your team. Talk to that a little bit.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm a serial entrepreneur. This isn't my first rodeo, but I knew that, you know, to really have a quality company and a successful company, you need to know what you don't know, right? And you need to know where you're strong and where you're weak. So our unique team has individuals that have no logistics experience at all that could bring an outside looking in perspective into the industry, coupled in with individuals that have 10, 15, 20 years of logistics experience. And we're in rooms and we're battling around different things to roll out around technology. But at the end of the day, it makes us better because we're getting these different perspectives from both sides. And I think that that's what really makes us strong, is that we've got all these different personalities and, you know, just it helps the culture and the building. And it's just a lot of fun, you know. Definitely, if you're in the Tech Square area, swing by the office, come drop in there. We're usually probably, you know, throwing darts and hitting balls and moving freight.
Yep. Amari, how many, just, you know, sorry, we talked about scale and so forth. How many, you guys started out, you were a one-man shop just starting out. How are things, you know, as far as your size now? And what are your kind of your opportunities as far as how big you kind of want to grow the company to?
Yeah, so right now we've got, 13 employees in the Atlanta office. We are going to add another 5 more before the year is out. Exciting. So we're definitely growing. But as far as how big we want to go, man, I want to take it to the moon. You know, I think there's tons of opportunity, and what we're doing is resonating with customers and carriers. And I think as long as we keep our head down and continue to execute, I think we could do that and continue to add great investment partners like a Comcast and like Atlanta Seed Ventures and, you know, angel investors like Tony Catalafano and individuals like that. We can continue to strive for greatness.
Yeah. And I think we talk about that from an economic development perspective at the Chamber a lot. You know, everybody gets caught up in a lot of these big companies that, you know, you want to lure to Atlanta, which is great. You know, that's something we should always strive for. But some of the companies that are growing here and starting and doing great things here in Atlanta, that's where that excites me more, really, in that sense, is we need to, you know, work with companies like yourself to continue to grow and scale and get, you know, whether it's a capital question, whether it's a customer question, whatever it may be, to continue to help you guys grow here in Atlanta. So
yeah, I appreciate it. You know, you've been great, and the Chamber has been awesome and supporting us, and knowing that as a small company, we can't do it by ourselves. We need help. Amen. You know, we need all the help, you know, so we definitely appreciate that.
Yeah. And I think one thing Amari and I have talked a lot about in the past is that Atlanta is such a unique market for logistics, especially with people like the Chamber and Georgia Tech and all the access we have. a lot of the companies we're going after as customers and partners for us are right in our backyard, and they're looking to innovate in this area. They're looking to help Atlanta-based companies grow and see them grow. And so it's been a really good market to access these shippers, access these customers who are facing these problems.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Great
supply
point,
chain
Sean.
City.
That's right. Hashtag supply chain city. if not once, 20 times a day, we're going to hear that. So,
right. There we
but,
go.
But to Amara, to your point, and Sean, to your point, the Metro Chamber is certainly one of a short list of true resources and partners that, again, it's all about deeds, right? It's not about lip service and all that stuff. Ben's a great natural collaborator, and it's no wonder why between some of those, between Georgia Tech and the Metro Chamber and all the other talent, technology, and all these other factors, it's no wonder Atlanta is such a hot place to be, right?
Absolutely.
So, Amari Ruff, thank you, of Sudu. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Oh, yeah, you're getting it. That was good.
We're trying.
I like it.
So if folks want
to
if folks want to learn more, where do they go?
Yeah, definitely come check out our website at sudu.io. That's Indigo Opera. Check us out there. I'm very active on LinkedIn. Definitely reach out there. Amari, A-M-A-R-I, last name R-U-F-F. And definitely follow us on Instagram, Facebook as well. You know, we try to keep the team engaged and continue to spread the word.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining us, Amari.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. So up next on Supply Chain Now Radio, we welcome Sean Henry, founder and CEO of Stored. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning. Thanks again for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for carving out time, especially in all your global travels here. So if you hadn't heard, Stored, S-T-O-R-D, made Inc. Magazine's Top 30 Emerging Companies of 2017. Sean and his co-founder, Jacob, also were on this year's 30 Under 30 list in the manufacturing and industry category on Forbes. So a couple of huge arrows in your quiver there, Sean.
Yeah, thank you.
So let's talk about, first off, tell us what Stored is.
Yeah, so Stored runs an integrated distribution network across the U.S., essentially. We are solving the problem of distribution fragmentation. You have all these warehouses across the United States, about 9,000, almost 6,000 of them are independents. And so at the end of the day, we connect those through our software and our technology and redeliver those to the shipper so that we help them distribute the products better at scale.
And fragmentation is one of those biggest challenges facing companies that want to warehouse and distribute their product, right?
Oh, absolutely. So fragmentation, if you look at the market and you look at how these companies are interacting, it doesn't matter if it's trucking, ocean cargo, warehousing. The biggest problem companies face with technology in their supply chain is fragmentation, is getting technology to that end person who's operating the truck, operating the warehouse, because there's so many different entities out there. If you have thousands of warehousing companies across the U.S., a third of them don't have a warehouse management system because they don't have the budget to afford it. So really that fragmentation is the piece we look to solve for our customers.
So kind of peeling back the layers of the onion around this fragmentation, speak to the handoffs. Because the handoffs, if you think of the end-to-end supply chain, especially with companies that don't have the technology that can talk to each other, how difficult does it make these handoffs as you're moving product throughout the different nodes?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we see warehousing as a big part of that, right? So transportation, a lot of companies have TMSs that they mandate that their shippers utilize or that their carriers utilize and interact with. We have great companies like Sudu and what Amari's doing that are helping them with that. But if you actually think about it, when the product's leaving the warehouse, those trucks still have to show up at a building, wait 6 hours in line to actually get their load delivered or loaded onto their truck and leave. And so there's so many handoffs in the supply chain and there's so many interactions or layers for these customers that the more transparency companies can bring to them, the better. And a lot of that is fragmentation. So we look for the easiest ways for us at Stored to interact with other parts of the industry. So when it comes to trucking, for example, our customers are sending trucks to our warehouses every day. So we offer them an online portal to book appointments so that their truck drivers can come on to our warehouses, book an appointment, and have an exact time when they are going to be loaded out. And so I think a lot of it is on companies like what Amari is working on, what we're working on at Stored, to really bridge the gap between those different segments of the logistics market.
And that speaks back to what Amari was talking about, the way a truck driver can get stuck at a DC for six mm-hmm. hours when it really should be two.
Exactly.
Just because they're messing around or they don't have their, you know, they just don't have it together.
Yeah, absolutely. They don't have the product together or, you know, that DC is just ran inefficient. It hurts all the way down.
So if you can, you know, set an appointment. Like, you know, on your platform, that's going to make everything a lot more efficient for everybody involved.
Well, Mario and I have collaborated in the past to look at customer opportunities because the freight and the warehousing side are so connected. I mean, everything that comes in and out of one of our warehouses goes in or out on a truck practically. And so I think you'll probably face it, Amari, in a lot of different parts of the industry of how the fragmentation hurts trucking. But for warehousing, one of the hardest parts is dealing with all the other ancillary companies that come to and leave and deliver to warehouses. There's so many entities out there that we just have to look for the best way to bridge the gap between other parts of the industry.
Well, so speaking of this fragmentation, this huge challenge out in the industry, what are some of the ways that you're seeing organizations solve and address these problems?
Yeah, so typically the way an organization will solve fragmentation in warehousing. So, I mean, if we talk to enterprise customers every single day, some of them are using 50, some of them are using 150 warehouses and distribution centers across the United States. Really, what they're trying to do is optimize where their product is relative to their customer to get the best freight cost, to get the best last mile cost and delivery time. But it's all about who has what building and where. And so we talk to companies who have 100 warehouses run by 80 different 3PL companies. And so if you look at that, they're dealing with 80 different ways of standard operating procedures, ways they're working with those warehouses, ways they're submitting orders to those warehouses, ways they're tracking inventory. That's where the complexity is. And so today what a company will try to do is they'll go to a warehouse management system provider, they'll buy the software themselves, the license themselves, and then they'll go to every distribution center they use and say, please utilize this software. But everyone has moved away from the idea of this is my distribution center. I'm the only person here, and I'm going to have two major DCs in the U.S. to this model of third-party logistics. Or this warehouse is going to operate 50 customers. So when that warehouse has 50 customers saying, here's my warehouse management system, they tend to just ignore it and say, sorry, I can't operate that way. You just have to come to what I do today. So that's where we try to bridge the gap with the customer. We say, at store, by running a network of right now just over 200 warehouses and distribution centers who are already connected on our warehouse management system and our software, we go to our customer with that turnkey solution and say, you have one platform to access distribution at scale. You don't have to go to each warehouse, do a 9-month implementation process and do a huge capital outlay to start interacting with them.
So we were talking earlier, some of the sectors that we were having a lot of conversations around your growth and expansion. What are some of the sectors that are really kicking the tires on what Stored offers and how your organization can help them tackle these challenges?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say it's a lot in B2B distribution, a lot in consumer packaged goods, retailers. I was checking my phone a few minutes ago, rudely, because we got an inbound lead from one of what I would say is probably a top 25 CPG brand. So excited to go talk to them after this.
Don't let us keep it.
That's the type of company we see really reaching out to us and interacting with these types of solutions. I mean, you talk about these customers who are getting their products to retail stores every single day. They can't have a 6-day lead time on a shipment to a retail store because they only have two distribution centers in the United States. They're trying to get more localized distribution and really, really optimize that product flow. And so a lot of that goes around B2B shipments. So a lot of consumer packaged goods, a lot of manufacturers and those types of brands.
You're talking about the usage of 3PLs earlier. I gleaned this nugget, I think, from your website here. In 2004, 56% of Fortune 500 companies used third-party warehouses. In 2012, 86% used those same third-party warehouses. So how much more complexity is that, you know, to your point, adding to the end-to-end supply chain?
Yeah, well, everyone's following the Amazon and the Walmart trend is really what we see. They're saying, how can I use my supply chain to argue to my end customer that I'm the best solution for them? How can I use my supply chain as a differentiator? And we really see that around two key things. And Amari put it really well before is asset utilization, but also asset optimization. And so these companies are trying to move to more asset light models. That's why they'll use a company like us or a company like Sudu for trucking. But they're also looking at how do I optimize the assets I currently have today is a big part of it. And so that's the trend that's in the industry right now. And I think the statistic you're referring to, I think we got from Armstrong Associates, a report they put out essentially back in 2002, about 56, 57% of companies, Fortune 500s, had their product, the majority of it, in their own distribution center, their own employees they ran themselves. And then in 2012, about 87% of enterprises had the majority of their product in third-party warehouses. And that's where you get that trend of everyone's moving towards, I don't want to own the asset. I want to use a third party. I want to get it closer to the customer. I don't want two buildings. I want 30 third parties that I pay as I use them. I pay for the volume I ship through. Mm-hmm. So it's really those two trends of asset utilization, but also asset optimization. How do I get more of a presence without buying more assets? But the assets I already have, how do I utilize them better than I am today?
Yeah, and going back to the Zara conversation we talked about earlier, I mean, what is a warehouse? It's just a place where you store inventory, basically. And, you know, who's to say what a warehouse is, you know, other than it could be a store or just a node, basically. So I think people are trying to get, you know, closer and closer to their customer base. And, of course, they leverage, you know, folks like yourself to do that, Sean.
So. Absolutely. Well, it's also what are you doing in that warehouse? So we brought up 3D printing before. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about 3D printing and how that works with a warehouse, typically, that might just change how a warehouse interacts. I mean, you have fulfillment centers right now that'll do kitting and printing of packaging material and marketing material. And so when a company doesn't have the infrastructure to do 3D printing in every market, that might just change one of the activities of a warehouse where instead of finished goods, they have raw goods that are going to go into the 3D printing process. Mm-hmm. And that's why you see companies like UPS on the forefront of that. It's just, how does a warehouse react to the changes in the market to actually just better serve that customer?
So let's talk. We were asking Amari what the long-term vision is. Same question for you, Sean. What, you know, where do y'all want to, where do you see yourself in 10, 20 years with Stuart?
Yeah, absolutely. At the end of the day, what we're trying to do is help our customers distribute their products better at scale. And so right now we have a network of 200 warehouses across the U.S. that our customers are on one single source login and platform, managing their inbound and outbound and their inventory and optimizing how it's placed. But eventually, just like Amari, we want to be global. We want to have a global distribution network. So at the end of the day, our vision is really to drive innovation down to our warehousing partners and suppliers. We are partnering with these independent business owners, just like Sudu is, helping them grow. And for the first time, we are the partner that can focus on technology and push down innovation to them. So our long-term vision is really develop out a global network to help our customers move our product, but at the same time, work with our suppliers really closely hand in hand to drive as much innovation as we can from a software perspective, but also just a optimization perspective for how do we build the best network for our customers.
Perfect. Well, Sean, thank you for joining us this morning. You're on quite a roll at Stored, and we look forward to checking back in down the road a little bit.
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me.
You bet. So I want to change gears a little bit and throw y'all a curveball.
Uh-oh.
So, and this is open. This is Amari,
Sean.
We
didn't rehearse this, did we?
No, we didn't.
Okay.
That's the only thing we didn't rehearse. So this morning I had a coaching call with one of our investors, leader of a multi-billion dollar organization. And one of the big points that is a timeless point, but is one that we're taking to heart and we're gonna try to double down on is the ability of leaders to the connectivity and how important it is to maintain and grow and increase that connectivity with, you know, your network and your team members and your, you know, folks you collaborate with. Any, you know, we have two CEOs of two fast growth organizations here and two other leaders here that I'm sure values that I think we're kindred spirits in many ways. How do y'all maintain connectivity in this fast, rapid pace environment, business climate?
I think for me, I try to stay active and out and about at different events and making myself accessible. I know from with our investors, we do like monthly newsletters and things like that. And, you know, we have our board meetings. But and what's cool about what I'm doing, and I've got a great team and a great co-founder who's internally focused and I'm externally focused. Mm-hmm. So anything around business development, sales, and, you know, just going to different events, that's kind of me. So within Sudu, I'm always the one that's out there waving a flag and making myself accessible. So I've always been a firm believer in that, you know, relationships are worth so much more than money, you know, and relationships will actually bring you money. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I go about things.
Yep. Sean, thank you, Amari.
I would say the same thing as Amari a little bit. for us, it's really important. Logistics at the end of the day is relationships. I think what we believe some companies get wrong in the logistics technology sector is that you don't just throw technology at the problem when there's, at the end of the day, for Sudu, sometimes there's a truck driver sitting there for 6 hours. He's a person who has feelings and is worried about what's going on. We have buildings who are worried about being filled up and how they're going to pay their lease this month and trying to optimize the capacity they have as a warehouse. Relationships matter so much with both your suppliers, your shippers, your team as a company, and your investors. And so we just try to do the best job we can, really aligning ourselves with the customer, partnering with them as much as possible, not just treating them like someone who pays us. Same with the supplier. We try to understand their goals. What are their goals as a company, as a warehouse? And then we do the same thing. So I had one of our investors say to us recently, which was super important to me, I never feel like I don't know what's going on at Stored. We keep on our monthly updates. We keep on a cadence of phone calls. So I think it's developing your network when it comes to the investment side and the kind of mentorship side and setting forth a cadence of kind of here's how I'm going to interact so everyone knows what's going on. Everyone feels clarity and transparency with your organization.
Terrific. Appreciate y'all both weighing in. Ben, we'll ask you the same question. Any thoughts there?
I guess I'll start. I'll shift it a little bit just to go back to what we talk about with Supply Chain City and really the connectivity we have here within the ecosystem.
Nice.
You know, here in Atlanta. Like a lot of what we talk about is really the different pillars that kind of, you know, really act as the foundation for the community here in Atlanta. One of those key pillars is really the growth stage companies that are here, of course, like Stored and Sudu, that really contribute to some of the gaps really that we have within the supply chain, and of course the you know, how we're filling those gaps and solving those problems for a lot of the larger companies, which brings us to kind of the second pillar there, which you have such a great base of Fortune 500 companies, mid-sized companies, whether it's on the B2C or B2B side, wholesale, 3PL, it's all here in Atlanta, companies of all shapes and sizes. And I think that's really kind of really the second pillar. And it really helps, of course, harbor in, you know, the needs of growth stage companies and helping them. And then kind of the third pillar is really the academic and the workforce side. Scott, I mean, I know that's close and very dear to your heart also, but, you know, we talked about Georgia Tech earlier, not to mention Clayton State University, the fantastic program they have down there. Kennesaw State's doing some amazing things when it comes to their business program and supply chain logistics there. Georgia State, met with them the other day. Walter Wallace and his guys are doing some fantastic stuff within there. They do a supply chain logistics roundtable there as well. So around connectivity, I think I've never seen a community with a more engaged and interested group of folks. Mm-hmm. And I think Atlanta, that's very unique, I think, to our community here, that people genuinely care. And well, like of course, with Sudu and Stored here, both of them, you know, had a lot of help along the way. I know you guys can definitely speak to that, whether it's Georgia Tech, whether it's Engage Ventures, Sean, who've definitely helped from a connectivity standpoint and relationship standpoint with you guys. That's, again, very unique with some of the accelerators, incubators, and, again, the connectivity and relationships that are really fostered, you know, that have really kind of helped our companies here, though. So I'll bring it back to that. I'll shut up now. But that's no, really
perfect.
I get on a kind of a supply chain city soapbox here. But that's really, it's unique to Atlanta, and it's something that's it's always exciting and very humbling to see.
Yeah, it's that Southern charm kind of coupled in there, right, where everybody's kind of helping and supporting each other.
That's right. I completely agree.
And Ben, part of your connectivity is getting people to, we were talking about this before the show, getting people to the chamber's office, which is just a spectacular place. I mean, it is a gorgeous place. The more that anybody can, what we were just saying, it's such a great home field advantage for the chamber and Atlanta as a whole. You know, it's just beautiful, open. That's a great way to connect right there.
Yeah. Well, you and I were joking about this before. I don't have much of a basis for comparison with the old office, but I'm told the new offices was a lot better
than
the old digs. We'll leave it at that, right? But no, it's been a very helpful in all the things that we try to host at the chamber. Again, whether you're an organization out there that needs to host an event or something that's related to a business event, networking event, whatever it may be around supply chain, our doors are always open for that. So,
I'm on the way.
There you go,
I'm
man.
Telling you.
Bring it on. Bring it on.
And Will, same question to you, connectivity.
Well, for sure. You know, that's a great one for us. I mean, Backbeat Marketing, you know, we are an agency that is focused on technology for sure. But that being said, I mean, I'm an old school guy. I believe in face-to-face and phone calls. And the more that you can, you know, it's so easy these days with technology to just do a video call or to just do, you know, a conference call. And we all, you know, there's a million different platforms.
Guilty as charged.
Yeah, I know. It happens. But if you can just jump in your car, I know that can be difficult in Atlanta. But if you wait until after 10, I tell you, it's super easy. If you focus on the hours between 10 and 3, you can get just about anywhere. And, you know, so the more that I can get out in front of you know, my clients and the other people, you know, the more that Scott and I meet and, you know, getting up to, you know, the chamber and all the other different, you know, the Technology Association of Georgia events that are so great all around town, really, you know, and get over to, you know, the Tech Village and the Georgia Logistics Center. I mean, these are great places. I always feel the energy, great ways to connect with people. And I can speak that me and my team, we always get something out of it.
Yep.
I mean, always.
Every time. Like clockwork. Well, before we close, I know, Amari, we did ask you about where to learn more. Sean Henry with Stored, how do we learn more about your organization?
Yeah, absolutely. Either drop us a line at our website, stored.co, STORD.CO, or just like anything else, you can find me on LinkedIn, Sean Henry, SEANHENRY, and shoot me a note, and I'm happy to connect.
Great. Thank you, Amari and Sean. And same question, Ben and Will, with you. Ben, how do we find out more about all the things that the Metro Chamber is involved in?
That's a loaded question. MetroAtlantaChamber.com would probably be your best bet. I'm also on LinkedIn and Twitter as well. But yeah, the best place for all things supply chain at the Metro Atlanta Chamber is MetroAtlantaChamber.com.
Perfect. And, you know, this... I don't think we mentioned on the front end, but this podcast today kind of kicks off a series of conversations we've got teed up to really dive into all things supply chain city. So Ben is the mayor of the Metro Atlanta supply chain industry, and appreciate all the things he does in that space. So I appreciate you being here today. And my other co-host today, Will Haraway. So, Will, how do we find out more about Backbeat Marketing?
Yeah, just backbeatmarketing.com is our website, and we're certainly very active on all the social stuff. On Twitter, it's at backbeatmktg, and then you can find me on LinkedIn, Will Haraway, and as you said earlier, that can be easily misspelled or mispronounced, but it is Haraway, and you should be able to find me right away.
Love it. Love it. Well, Ben and Will, pleasure to co-host this new series with both of you. Looking forward to our next conversation in just a couple weeks. So on that note, we're going to close on a couple of final items. Next up on Supply Chain Now Radio, we're going to be featuring Tandrea Bellamy, VP of Engineering with UPS, on August 20th. She's going to be talking about some of the things we need to do to help women, get more women into the engineering field. So as a father of two daughters, that's very important, near and dear to my heart there. So looking forward to Tandrea joining us on the 20th, along with Ben and Will again. And we'll also have one more surprise guest we're in the process of confirming. Also, August 16th, the Reverse Logistics Association is partnering with Apex Atlanta to conduct a one-day workshop of sorts at the Home Depot Return Center in McDonough. We all know in this age of e-commerce, the ever-growing importance of reverse logistics. We're going to have a one-day forum on recycling, sustainability, and all things reverse logistics. So you can learn more about that at apexatlanta.org. August 18th, Apex Atlanta, Women in Manufacturing, and the Georgia Manufacturing Alliance is going to be teaming up on this Saturday from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Have you, any of y'all heard about the Veterans Empowerment Organization, VEO of Atlanta?
I have, yeah, okay. Amongst the Vetlanta and some others as
there
well.
There we go.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So VEO, I'm not going to do it justice here as we close, but a 4-acre veteran shelter of sorts. They've got 200 beds. They focus on taking homeless veterans off the streets, providing them with a means to bootstrap themselves and you know, giving them a warm place to live, warm meals, change of clothes, ultimately, you know, giving them skills and helping them get a job in a 3 or 4 month period. And just a great story that has not gotten enough buzz. It's founded by a Haitian immigrant that came over and built a company while we had a couple wars going on. So he wanted to give back. So great story. So on August 18th, we're going to have an army of folks down at VEO on their 4-acre Atlanta campus, figuring out where we can help. You know, we're going to bring supplies. No one's going to
they know better than to give me a hammer and nails because I have no skills in that arena. But we're going to figure out how we can help between the three organizations. So if you want to learn more, you can also check that out at apexatlanta.org. Also, next APEX certification classes. If any members of our audience wants a industry-leading supply chain certification, CLTD and CSCP, namely, our next class is going to be at Georgia Tech in November, and that's going to be a 2.5-day boot camp session. Finally, big thanks to our sponsors, APEX Atlanta and Talent Stream. To learn more about either, or really to learn more about anything we've talked about today, we're going to make it easy. You can shoot me an email at EVP for Executive Vice President at apexatlanta.org, and we'll make sure to provide links, intros, you name it, to the, our guests or the organizations we've talked to talked about today. So big thanks to our audience for tuning in. Big thanks to our guests, Amari Ruff with Sudu.
Sounds good.
Speed and tempo in Chinese. I'm bilingual, finally.
Love it.
Sean Henry with Stored, thanks for your time today.
Absolutely.
To our co-host, Ben Harris with the Metro Atlanta Chamber, Will Haraway with Backbeat Marketing. Thanks to our audience from the beautiful supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia. We wish each of you a wonderful weekend.